with a $5 meal deal with new McValue. You pick a McDouble or a McChicken, then get a small fry, a small drink, and a four-piece McNuggets. That's a lot of McDonald's for not a lot of money.
Prices and participation may vary. McDouble meal, $6 in some markets for a limited time only.
Howard Ellefsen is a Norwegian keyboardist. Better known as Mortist, in the early 1990s, he was part of the first incarnation of Emperor, one of the most important bands in the history of Norwegian black metal. In 1992, he took his dark melodies to a new dimension with his solo project, laying the foundations for the style known today as Dungeon Synth. He is currently active touring all over the world and is working on a new studio album. I'd like to start asking you a bit before of your coming into the scene and becoming a musician. I wanted to know what were some of your early musical fascinations, things that got you into music so much that you wanted to be part of that.
Well, you know, my first experience with music, of course, like most other kids my age, was Kiss. You know, saw them on TV with the makeup and Gene Simmons breathing fire and spitting blood. And I'm like, that's the coolest thing I've seen in my whole life. I was fascinated by the visual aspects, and I experienced Gene Simmons as sort of a quite a, like a dark figure, you know, even though, you know, Kiss was quite cartoony, but I didn't realize that until later on, and I don't care. I still love them. So that was my first experience. And moving on from there, I remember I saw probably around the time of the Number of the Beast album by Iron Maiden, I started seeing some of their posters, like some older kids in my neighborhood. They apparently were into Iron Maiden or something. And I was in one of those guys' room once. And for the first time in my life, I saw this really cool, like the coolest artwork I'd seen in my life. It was Eddie, you know. You remember that fucking the Number of the Beast, the 12-inch, the single, had slightly different artwork
yes.
than the album? Yeah, and it's a little more visceral. It's like in the middle of all that fire, and there's blood, and it's got that head in his hands and all that. I remember I saw that, and I think the other poster was Run to the Hills or something, and I was like, this is so fucking great. And I, what I didn't realize was I had for the first time in my life seen heavy metal artwork, and I was about 7 years old. So once again, the visual aspect of metal or just music in general was hugely appealing to me, you know. So it kind of, I think it laid the groundworks for image and how important that would be to me later on in my life as a musician. Yeah. So carrying on from there, I started hearing, I was into like, you know, I saw Wasp. I discovered Wasp right after that, which was their first album, which once again is incredibly visual, and it's like Kiss, but taken to the next level, you know, with the saw blades and the spitting of the blood and the skulls in the torture rack with that half-naked lady on it that I copied later on for the Stargate tour. I had a torture rack with a half-naked lady on it. You know, as I stole that and many other things. So that's kind of like that's the story of the 80s for me. And you know, we move into like, all of a sudden somebody played me In League with Satan with Venom, you know, and I was like, fuck, this is the craziest music I ever heard. This must have been like in 86 or something. And then I heard Metallica and Slayer and from then on we go, you know, and I always kept looking for the most extreme stuff I could find. And then somebody one day, they brought along a couple of copies of a magazine called Damage Inc., which was Maniac, you know, the original Mayhem singer, or not the original, but one of the early ones. That was his magazine. And of course, there was Mayhem on the front. And I'm like, what the hell is this? You know, that's the greatest logo I've seen in my life. And I realized you could write these bands. That was a new one. I didn't know that was possible, because to me, all of these bands were like gods, you know. There was no way you could connect with them, you know. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm trying to read his article. It was in English, and I was still quite young, so my English wasn't that great, but I understood most of it, and I understood that you could contact the band, and I wrote my first fan letter to the Mayhem, that classic Mayhem P.O. box address back in the 80s. And a few weeks later, Euronymous wrote me back, you know, and with a copy of the Death Crush demo. And he was talking about the Mysterious album even then. And this was like probably at some point in 1989. And he was talking about a new singer called Dead and some other stuff and his new label, you know, Death Like Silence. And he had taped a whole bunch of stuff on the B side of the Death Crush demo, like from demos of bands he was going to put out on the label, like Rotting Christ and Tormentor, Master's Hammer, Hades from Peru, Massacre from Colombia. I'm not quite sure how to pronounce it,
yeah,
but they were supposed to be put out there with, you know, Mr. Montoya and a bunch of other bands, you know, that I forget now, but it was probably like 10 bands, Merciless, of course, and some other stuff. So yeah, that very quickly explained that was the 80s, you know, that's how I started and how it developed.
So suddenly you were not only witnessing how extreme metal was developing, but also how extreme metal was happening near you, because suddenly there was this band in Norway playing that kind of music that was fascinating you.
Yeah. I mean, at the time, they might as well have been living on the moon, you know, because I didn't have a car. And, you know, I was like 12 years old. I couldn't just jump on a bus or a train and visit them because my parents would kill me, you know. They lived about, I think they lived outside of Oslo. I lived about 2 hours from Oslo. But it didn't feel like it was close at the time. Only in hindsight have I considered, like, wow, that's no distance at all. You can make it there in an hour and a half. But at the time, you know, an hour and a half away by car or train to a kid that was like about 12, 13 years old, that's a fucking long way. You know, like I said, I might as well have been living on the moon. So what we did was the communication was like through letters and stuff like that.
Okay. Well, and that communication gave you, besides the music, like the will, the strength, the sort of thought that I want to do this as well.
Yeah, you could say that. I realize now that was your original question. when I started discovering demo tapes, I think that's when I started realizing that this is something maybe I could do, because it felt, you know, when you listen to these bands that are already putting out albums, like, you know, my favorite bands in the 80s were stuff like Anthrax and Possessed and Creator and you know, Celtic Frost and stuff like that. And to me, it just felt like there's no way I could do stuff like this. I loved it, but it was so far away from my ambition that for the longest time, I just remained a fan. You know, I didn't think that I was going to be able to create music on an instrument, because I didn't really play any instruments or anything. But, you know, once I started discovering demo bands, it was like, wow, you know, maybe I could be a part of this, you know. So I actually was thinking about starting a fanzine back in 1989. But then I started talking to, I'd met Ishan and in high school. We were about 13 years old, and he was already in bands with Samoth, and that's how I met those guys way before Emperor started, you know. But I actually started getting, I was becoming friends with one of Ishan's classmates too, and he was playing guitar as well, and we started talking about, like, we should form a band. I mean, I don't play instruments, but I could try singing. So we started that, and that's how my first band, Rupturance, came to be. I actually posted a little video of that on my Instagram not too long ago. So we were doing that in, I don't know if we started in 89 or if we started in early 1990 maybe, but definitely getting in touch with bands like Mayhem and some other bands that were doing demos and starting to get all these demo tapes in the mail. It was definitely a catalyst for me to think that, well, shit, you know, this is something that maybe I could do as well. And become a deeper part of the whole underground movement, you know.
Yeah, well, and by 91, yes, 91 it was, you were already with the rest of the guys putting Emperor together and finally getting to meet the guys in Mayhem, right?
Well, the first time I met, you're correct about 91, that was, 91 was when I joined Emperor. It wasn't called Emperor at the time. It didn't have a name. It was Ishan and Same Outside Project. They had a death metal band that they were kind of like their main band, and then everybody were getting into a bit more darker stuff. So they wanted to start a side project that I eventually joined, which was in early 91 maybe, or the summer, I can't remember. What was the other part of the question?
where you finally met the guys in person.
Oh, yes. That was actually in 1990. Me and a friend of mine went into Oslo on a bus. We went to a show. It was... it was at this place. It was at a venue called Bootleg, which is no longer existing. It hasn't been existing for many, many years. But there was a show there with Dark Throne, believe it or not, one of the very few shows they ever did. And Cadaver, which is, you know, Anders Odden.
Yep.
That was his old band. And they're still going. And Abhorrence from Finland, who I can't remember. I think they became, or members of Abhorrence started another band, Finnish band that became quite popular. I can't remember which one it was. Amorphis,
yeah,
maybe?
I think it's Amorphis, yes.
Yeah. So this was in 1990. And So we went there. You know, I had to lie to my parents about going somewhere. I told them I was sleeping over at a friend's place when I was in actuality going to Oslo. They would never have allowed me to go there because I was like 14 or something. And maybe 15. And so we went there. And all of a sudden, I see these two dudes like in leather jackets and corpse paint. And I'm like, fuck, that's mayhem. So they were there, at least Euronymous and Dead. So and I was already writing a little bit with Euronymous. So I talked to him a little bit. I mean, I was super nervous. You know, I had never, to me, they were like gods, you know, and in that corpse paint that no one else were doing that really, unless you count like Blasphemy and some of your South American bands, you know, were doing it in the 80s. But over in Norway, it was like almost nobody that I can think of except for Mayhem. So that was stunning for me to see that. Again, it's the visual thing that I love so much. And I just briefly got to say hello to Dead. And that was the only time I met him, the first and last time. A few months later, he was dead, you know. Dead was dead.
Okay, so this contact went through your putting together your own music and playing with Emperor. So I guess they were sort of kind of a reference for you guys.
Well, in 1990, Emperor didn't exist. You know, Emperor started in 91. But yeah, we were definitely inspired by Mayhem. And there's this infamous Slayer Mag interview where Euronymous and Dead talks a lot about how they really wanted the underground to be and how they're unhappy with the way that it's been developing. You know, they were kind of like nostalgically looking back at the 80s, you know, with bands like Sodom and Hellhammer, you know, and the visuals of that time, the imagery, and I guess the music styles and all that. And I was quite influenced by it. I thought they were right, because by that point I had collected quite a few vinyl records, and my favorites would always be the 80s, mid 80s stuff. I always thought that was the best look, you know, before everything kind of developed into everybody was starting to sing about politics, and the leather jackets and the studs and the bullet belts were gone, and they put on shorts and white t-shirts or whatever. I mean, these days I don't care, but back in those days, you know, it was very much about the visual aspect. So for me, I wanted every band to look like Hellhammer. You know, that was like, if they did that, I would buy the album. If they looked like Anthrax or something, then maybe not so much. No disrespect to Anthrax, but I was a 15-year-old kid, you know, and I was just going with, I was listening with my eyes, if you know what I mean. But yeah, that was the way I was back then.
So you eventually got to be friends with the Euronymous. So as you mentioned before, he from the very start of your communications was mentioning this idea of the Mysterious Doom Satanas as the album that was happening eventually.
Yeah.
So I wanted to know if you guys ever discussed the progress of the album once the recording was finally happening, you know, like in 92, 93, I think it was. And what were the perspectives that you got from him?
To be honest, I never really discussed the progress of that record with him. Don't know why. The way I got to know him was actually towards the very end of his life, was when I got to know him better, when a lot of that stuff was happening, and he knew that there was problems with Varg and all that. So we connected more over the fact that my girlfriend, who became my girlfriend at the time, Ilsa, was being sort of smuggled into Norway because she had to run away from home, and Euronymous was helping her find a place to stay, and he called me, and I was helping out with that. That was when I was really kind of communicating with him way more. Didn't really talk to him much about the album, to be quite honest with you, except for that letter and probably a couple of other letters where he said he was almost done. But I think that was probably something you said all the time, and then, you know, it took a long time. So I have to admit that I didn't really discuss the album with him that much.
Okay, so the news that you got from the band doing the album was, like, I guess at the time, these rough mixes that were circulating, and everyone was, like, sort of into that, was listening to those tapes.
Yeah, there was, of course, this is like 30-plus years ago, so of course my memories are a bit vague, but there was a tape out there, and I did not get it from Euronymous directly. I can't remember where I got it from, but I did have a copy of this sort of, I don't know if it was an advanced tape or a rough mix, but from what I remember, it didn't have vocals on it. So I guess it must have been from a time where they just weren't sure what to do with the vocals. Because, of course, after Dead passed away, you had Kaltakulis, you know, from Sarpsborg, who was a vocalist in the band for a short time. He was there when they opened Helvete, and for a few months, and then something happened where I think they had a falling out, so he left the band. And I'm really not sure what happened in between. I guess they must have really looked for a vocalist while they were recording the album. Because, yeah, there was this tape that I'm really sure it was instrumental. There were no vocals. And, of course, then after a while, you know, we heard this rumor that Attila from Tormentor was doing the vocals. But, I mean, I didn't know Attila at the time, so I had no way to confirm it. I only got to know Attila many, many years later.
Okay, so it was rumors, and you didn't confirm this with the band?
No. Not really, no. We just heard about it. It wasn't like, we didn't talk every day, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was letters now and then, and a lot of times he would focus on other releases, on Death Like Silence, like all of Euronymous's plans for the label. You know, like all of a sudden, finally the Merciless album was put out, and I was distributing that. I remember I bought like a bunch of copies from him and sold to my friends in my town and all that. So I was like a small distributor for him. And same with Burzum, some of the other stuff that came out, the reissue of Death Crush, you know, with the red sleeve instead of pink, and maybe the Abruptum one and some other stuff. So you know... we also talk business in a sense, you know, where I would buy stuff from him and sell to my little sort of clientele, so to speak.
Okay, so when you finally got to listen to the album, it was when it was released properly after everything that happened.
Yeah, that was when I heard the final version of it. And what we had to do, Voices of Wonder became the ones to release it. I'm not exactly sure if Euronymous cut a deal with them before he died, or if they somehow, in some strange way, got the rights after he died. But all of a sudden, we found out that if, you know, we could pre-order the album, which we did. And we probably pre-ordered that in 93, maybe even 92, which was when Euronymous was still alive. And it took forever to get the copy. I got it as soon as it was released, but I don't think that was until maybe late 93 or even early 94. And yeah, that was the first time I heard it. I mean, properly mixed and everything. And I thought it was absolutely fantastic. Nobody had ever played guitar like that before that I had ever heard, you know, that sort of dissonant kind of riffing and all that. And then that incredibly technical drumming. But I think the standout element was, even though the guitars and the drums are incredible, the vocals, I don't think anybody expected the vocals. They're like theatrical. You know what I mean? They're very dramatic and dynamic and expressive. So we were like, wow, you know, because we heard it was going to be Attila from Tormentor, and we'd all listened to the couple of Tormentor demos a lot. But he sings differently on those. It's not the same as on The Mysterious. So we were like, whoa, my God, it was almost like it was challenging, because, you know, when you're that young, you're a little bit narrow minded and you kind of want things to be a certain way. So it was almost like it was challenging. It actually kind of forced us to expand our views on music, you know. But looking back, I mean, it's for me, it's the most important black metal release that came at that point. And I say that with all due respect to Dark Throne and even to some of the Burzum records. You can say what you want about Varg, but the music is what it is. And some of the Swedish stuff, and of course, some of the classics like Sarcophago and all that. But that record just kind of stands out, because I think it's a very brave album too, because it doesn't really follow all of the, I guess, preconceived rules of black metal or, you know, atmospheric music or whatever. So it still holds up as a really fucking great record to me.
Yeah, and something that I wanted to know, and that you mentioned briefly, this Attila involvement. I know that many guys in the scene were kind of shocked as well because of his performance, and maybe they were preferring what they were doing with Death, because there were a couple of records, a couple of tracks that were recorded in a studio with Death. I think it was Freezing Moon and Carnage. I think
might be, yeah.
Those
for the compilation album.
Yeah, exactly. And it was like a shock to have Attila singing on the album after what they maybe even they were witnessing Mayhem live with Death as well. So it was kind of a shock. But you embrace it from the get go.
To the best of my recollection, I thought it was really good. I mean, there was no doubt that I found the vocals to be the way they sounded. I don't know if I had any expectations. I suppose I just sort of expected to sound like, you know, like a black metal vocalist. And then it was so much more than that. It was all that theater and drama and buildups and the dynamics, you know, which he does so well to this day. I don't know if anybody was shocked, to put it that way. I can't remember anyone saying like, "Wow, this, I don't know if I like." I remember it, everybody loved the record, which is very. That's a nice thing, because I think it proved early on that a lot of black metal people are actually quite open-minded people. And I think that's been proven when you see how a lot of these, especially Norwegian black metal bands, developed into, you know, embracing very different styles down the road, you know. So we were more open-minded than you would think. But it's definitely true to say that it was unexpected. I don't know if shocked is the right word. I don't know. At least I didn't feel shocked. I just remember I guess surprised is probably a better word, but instantly really liked it.
Okay, so when the album was finally released in May 94, you were, if I'm correct, you were already kind of removed from the scene. I don't know if you were living in Sweden by then.
Yeah, I moved in January of 94. I moved to Sweden, and I think I started drifting away from the scene probably around 95. I didn't leave it overnight. It was just that I kind of stopped feeling enthusiastic about it. I kind of lost interest in it in a way, because, you know, black metal, when we started out with it, it was very unique and new, and I thought it was interesting. I thought, like, every release that came out, like all the Dark Throne, Immortal, Enslaved, and, you know, Mayhem, everything kind of had its own sound, and there were all these cool bands, you know, in Eastern Europe and South America, and we discovered, and it was very exciting and fun for a while. But then I felt, but you got to keep in mind, I had kind of a, I don't know, elitist kind of attitude, which was not, you know, not politically, but in terms of like who gets to do this, it's ridiculous when you think back about it. But I just felt like by 95, it was becoming a little bit of a thing, you know. Those were the early days of black metal spreading and becoming more popular. And I felt like a lot of the stuff that came out was starting to sound similar in the same way. Everybody were copying Dark Throne, or everybody were copying, you know, Mayhem or something like that. And eventually everybody started copying Emperor and other bands, you know. So it was becoming a little boring, to be honest. So musically, I kind of went other ways. I started listening more to a lot of strange, like, synthesizer music. I was really getting into, like, you know, the Tangent Dream, the Klaus Schulze, and just goth stuff, punk. I went really way back to my roots in terms of, I was starting to listen to a lot of old hard rock and 80s heavy metal again, new wave of British heavy metal, that kind of stuff, 70s rock. So I was really branching out, and the more I did that, the more I think I felt like black metal was kind of boring now, you know. So I was naturally just drifting away from it, I'd say by 95.
Yeah. So you never really got the chance to sort of discuss these kind of things with the people in the scene, like this impact that the Mysterium Satanas was kind of getting. Because I guess as well, everything was like, the band was no more by then, and everything like was kind of silent.
Yeah, I think it just became this sort of instant cult classic. But, you know, since there was no band there anymore, the album was there, but the band wasn't. I think we were all sort of talking about, you know, that is a great album, and this is unexpected phenomenon of Attila as the vocalist was definitely something we talked about. To be honest, I can't remember exactly the contents of the conversations. I can't remember like any quotes, like something that was said. It became an instant, what you call like benchmark. You know, I think everybody, even if they admitted it or not, probably measured themselves up against that record, you know, if you had a band that played that kind of music.
Okay. Well, and do you have any particular favorite song on the album?
No, not really. I mean, I just think as a whole, it's a great record, and that's what a good album is all about. You know, it shouldn't just be carried by one song or two songs. I think the whole thing should be you know, as a whole, I think it's just a fantastic record. It's just I think it's an icon in terms of atmospherics. And I really think Mayhem set the standard with some of those riffs. That sort of cold, dismal, mysterious and eerie kind of atmospherics that I think a good black metal band should know how to do. You know, I think that's just, it just sets the standard. Again, I think it's the benchmark for that kind of stuff.
Okay. Well, some years ago, the band did a tour playing the entire album. I wonder if you went to any of those shows?
I never go out. I did see that they were doing it, and I think that's great. But I mean, I was lucky enough to tour with them, and I will do that again in the US later this year. But we toured together in Europe in 2022, I think it was, and there was a section of that show. That show was, I believe, it was split into three parts, which is really cool. Again, it's almost like theater, you know, with these interludes or whatever. And it started out with like the early stuff, and then in the middle, I think it was something else, and I think the end. Was it? It's not important where it was, but there was a section in the show where it was all about the mysterious, you know, the whole stage just kind of changed vibes. And it was all about the hooded figures and all that stuff. And it was all the mysterious stuff, you know. So I got to see that about 30 times. So, you know, I got my dose, thankfully. But I didn't see the original The Mysterious Tour, no.
Okay, but it's a pleasant experience because I was about to ask you how was it like to tour with them and this upcoming tour that you guys have in the US as well.
Yeah, it was we had a lot of fun on that tour, and I get along with all those guys, you know. So I'm looking forward to the US tour based upon my experiences with Mayhem earlier. I've always gotten along great with that band, you know what I mean? So ever since the Euronymous days, we got along. And then, you know, I didn't know Necro Butcher back then because he wasn't in the band at that time. He had left just before I started writing with Euronymous. He left in 91, of course. But I never met him for some reason. I guess he didn't go to the shows with where I met Euronymous and Dead, or I didn't see him or something. But anyway, I didn't get to know Necro Butcher until many years later, but he's a really nice guy too. I like him, you know. They're all cool. They're all very unique individuals, all of them. But we get along really well.
What's your current relationship with the album? I mean, do you play it often, or I don't know. You mentioned that it was like Hayla's one of the most important records of that scene at the time. But has your perspective changed throughout the years?
I don't think anything has diminished. I think if anything on that record, I mean, for the record, I really like the music on it, but even if I had changed as a person and my musical taste had changed, the nostalgic value that record has for me because of the times when it came out and the memories around that album and those times are so vivid and powerful in my life. I mean, that album would never cease to be important. You know, it always retains an importance in some way for me. Even if I was going to go crazy and stop liking the music, there would still be so many important memories around it. But I didn't go crazy. I still like the music. So, no, it'll always have high value on several levels.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.